Sometimes when we come together on a Sunday and we take a look at the scripture passages and we listen to them carefully, they really give us great pause. Because sometimes they're diverse, they're still significant, and sometimes they are very complex. And I say to you today, these readings that we have just heard are very much like that, because they're covering different aspects of God's law. Just to remind you what we just had in our psalm, that psalm begins with these words: "Happy are they whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord. Happy are they who observe his decrees and seek him with all their hearts, who never do any wrong, but always walk in his ways." Well, as we remember the Ten Commandments and what they all say, most of us can make one claim or another that I never did that. Never murdered anyone. Never committed adultery. Never swore falsely. And then we come to this passage from the Sermon on the Mount, and we begin to wrestle with a deeper meaning of each of those commandments, because Jesus is taking us in a deep dive into these words, and he's taking us to a depth where we can discover just how life-giving and life-enhancing these words can be. This study requires our careful thought so we don't misinterpret and we don't reduce it to moral legalism. In a few short verses just before this particular gospel passage, we can hear this being said by Jesus, and it'll sound familiar to you. "Do not think that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven." And so we hear that Jesus is asking his followers to trust the scriptures they've been given, to rely on them, to love them. When he refers to the law and the prophets, he's telling us to have respect for them. These scriptures are not irrelevant to us, even though they are in the Old Testament. And Jesus wants to take those words and give us the deeper truths behind them. It's out of this kind of understanding that he lays out a series of antitheses. "You have heard it said, but I say." In this series of sayings, Jesus wants to apply ourselves to living in relationships that are life-giving and life-enhancing. He's not contradicting the law in any way. Instead, he's deepening it. And living this way is harder than simply living by a list of rules and laws. It's quite easy to say, "I didn't murder anyone today." But it's harder to refrain from anger and insults. It's easy to say, "I didn't commit adultery today." It's harder to avert our eyes from an attractive person, and maybe even harder to change your thought pattern once you've seen them. It's easier to live by that list of rules and laws, by being able to check them out every day and say, "Didn't do that." It's easier to do that than to live in an authentic and dynamic and redemptive relationship with all people. Laws can be static, they can be arbitrary. They can seem to leave us with a yes or no choice. Yes, unfortunately, I am guilty of that. No, I'm innocent. Jesus reached into the law to reveal its true objective, and that is to value and protect those around us. For instance, it's not simply enough to prohibit the killing of someone, because really, that's refraining from killing. It's refraining from doing something. And that's kind of a negative. It leaves an empty space. But the point of that whole idea is that we're supposed to value others. So instead of simply refraining from something, we're supposed to fill that emptiness with valuing the other person. What is required is that we not only fail to do them harm, but that we are engaged in proactively seeking their good, affirming their worth, even to the risk of our own good at times. And it begins with us. Jesus told us, "So when you bring your gift to the altar and you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift before the altar and go be reconciled with them." We dare not wait for them to act, for them to seek us out, for them to offer us a hand in reconciliation. And Jesus is even indicating that we cannot worship well until we have stepped redemptively towards someone with whom we are in conflict and seek to repair that damage. And this is exactly what our exchange of peace is about. And it's why we do it right before we begin Holy Communion in our service. That's the time to make amends. That's the time to say, "I'm sorry, forgive me." It's not meant to be a mini coffee hour to catch up on all the latest news, but it is a time that follows our confession and our absolution. It's a time to begin the reconciliation with the one whom you have hurt. It is a time to solidify the good connections and relationships we have with one another. And it's truly a time to celebrate peace with each other and peace with God. Now, the challenge regarding adultery and divorce can be easily reduced to moralism and self-discipline. But there's a whole lot more at work here than what we see at first glance. First of all, the passage serves to recognize the culture of that time, which had reduced women to the status of property, property of whoever was the dominant male in their life, be it their father, their husband, or maybe even a brother. It had reduced them also to being a source of satisfaction for a male. And that's why that part of the reading has pronouns and nouns that are masculine. Now, Jesus bluntly and repeatedly elevated the status of women far above the male dominance that was the norm of that culture. In that setting, women as property owned by the husband could be dealt with as necessary for the benefit of the husband. And if for any even trivial reason he did not like what she was doing or who she was, he could write her a certificate of divorce. But Jesus places the value of persons in such a way as to prohibit this objectifying of them through lust or discarding of them through a frivolous divorce. For us as Christians, whether we are male or female, we are to treasure and nurture one another as sisters and brothers, as equals, and as worthy of honor and protection. Jesus concludes all of these examples with an establishment of simple and profound truthfulness as being a foundation for how we interact with each other. What Jesus asks of his followers, of you and of me, is a complete trustworthiness that doesn't need oaths of affirmation in dealing with one another. What he asks is that we live lives which are utterly true, transparently honest, dependably trustworthy. And in so doing, we are a reflection of the Holy Trinity, who, in relationship with one another, are never in dispute. They're never keeping each other at a distance, and they never act with disregard for the value of the other. So, as Moses admonished the children of Israel, so I admonish all of you. Choose life. To choose life is to love the Lord your God, to obey God, to hold God fast. To choose life will make a significant difference in the shape that your own life will take. To choose life is to stand to positively restore and respond to God and your neighbor. To choose life is to trust in the promises of God. And that kind of a choice will make all the difference. And so I tell you, choose life.